It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. With me in studio now, Mike Fouché joins us every Wednesday from the Daily Line. You can find it at thedailyline.net. Covers all things Chicago, Cook County, and Illinois politics. Mike, good to see you.
It's great to be here.
Lots to talk about tonight. Why don't we start with the state? And there hasn't been much movement in the House and Senate when it comes to anything.
Nothing.
But let's talk about what everybody's focused on next year.
Yeah, I know, right? We're going to win next year.
You know, as we size up who's running for governor, I mean, we're starting to see...
Isn't that incredible? Like,
I know.
We're like...
April of 2017.
10 months away from anybody casting a vote at all, and we're already talking about that. But the truth is that... We're probably going to know really by August when the state fair rolls around for Democrat Day and then for the Republicans' Governor Day. We're going to know who the nominee is. The Democratic Party in Illinois really wants to shave this down and get it done so that they can have a nice long run where they can bash.
Let me ask you this, though. This is something that I feel we kind of saw a little bit when it came to the national primary when it was Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Who does the Democratic Party in the state of Illinois want, and who is going to ignore that and continue to run?
I think that there is a lot of conflict here. I mean, so, you know, obviously you got the big rich guys, right? J.B. Pritzker, who's the third richest guy in Illinois, who has been talking about running. He hasn't officially run. He's very coy. You know, we're talking about officially running.
He's an exploratory.
Right. He's an exploratory. But the truth is, the difference is that once you announce, then you have to form a committee and then you have to start showing how much money you raise, which is kind of like, you know, does it really matter for the third richest guy in Illinois? And then you've got the other wealthy candidate, Chris Kennedy, who is wealthy, but not Pritzker wealthy. And I know, but like it matters, you know, and Chris Kennedy actually gave himself $250,000 to his campaign, but he's only raised $150,000 since he announced 3 weeks ago.
Is that namely because these guys are wealthy and they don't need to raise money?
That's a great question. I don't know. You know, I mean, he's got a lot of big name donors that have been coming up there and, you know, writing $1,000 checks and that sort of thing. I should add, it's not that he has raised only $150,000. That's how much has been declared so far. The actual filings come out on the 17th of April.
So there may be more. Yeah.
There may be more, but these are the large dollar amounts. And so anytime you give $500 or more, you have to declare it. And that's what's been declared. He may have a lot of $150 and less contributions, which is actually the case for Amaya Pawar. Amaya Pawar says
the
that he raised
up in the
47th ward alderman. He's running. He says he's raised about, you know, $100,000, $150,000 in small dollar donations. He's got $325,000. And just to confuse you, the more numbers, Daniel Biss, the senator from Skokie and Evanston, he's raised about $300,000, and he had a big pile of cash because he ran for higher office before. He's got $1.5 million in hand. Then there's these other guys like Bob Daber, who's the Madison County school superintendent down in southern Illinois, and Kurt Summers, the treasurer of Chicago. He's sort of lurking in the background.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because Kurt Summers represents at least a sort of a variety. I mean, Daniel Biss
is not.
Yeah. Daniel Biss may not be rich, but he's part of the Springfield system.
Right.
You know, something. Kurt Summers is interesting because African-American, part of Chicago's, you know, treasurer?
Treasurer of Chicago.
Treasurer for Chicago. Not really a ROM guy, but kind of a ROM. I mean, interesting
sort
candidate.
Of a Tony Preckwinkle guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely interesting, and he's spent a lot of time trying to build relationships with other black leaders in Chicago and around the city. And, you know, if he gets in the race, I think that that's going to be a big question.
Marilyn Katz was on our show. I know she did Alder Track.
Yep.
And Monday she talked about there's no way to win the governor of Illinois without the black community in Chicago.
There's no way for a Democrat.
Democrat,
win.
Of course.
There's no way for a Democrat to win the primary without the Chicago black vote.
So, I mean, obviously the candidates that we mentioned, one has the best opportunity to court the African-American vote
in Chicago? I think that's a really great question. And I think that one of the things that Kurt Summers is probably weighing is, do I really want to get in this? Because it's a big, big race and it's a big challenge. And he's going to have to figure out what donor base to go to. I mean, that's really what the question is. where is the big dollar donor race going to go to in a race like this? Because also, by the way, there's lurking in the background Susana Mendoza, the recently elected Illinois comptroller, and who used to be the clerk of Chicago. She's got plenty of, not a lot of money, but she's got a good start.
That seemed like a strange move for someone who just got elected, who just ran and turned it around. Do you think that has any standing with the voters in the state of Illinois that are like, what? Didn't we just vote for you for a different job?
I mean, Dawn Clark Netsch did it. When she ran for governor, she had just won election as comptroller, and then she turned right around and ran for governor. She lost. She lost to Jim Edgar, which I think was a much more difficult candidate to defeat. But, you know, I don't see why that's not a problem.
Last question on this. I mean, from your vantage point at Daily Line, I mean, as you just mentioned, Jim Edgar was a tough candidate to beat.
He was very popular.
Where does he stand? I mean, does the Republicans in Illinois, are they firmly behind Bruce Rauner?
Well, the difference between Jim Edgar and Bruce Rauner is Jim Edgar was very middle of the road. He was popular with independents. Bruce Rauner has very low approval ratings, and he's not necessarily popular with independents. And what Bruce Rauner has attempted to do is just beat the crud out of everybody and make everybody else look bad.
So, now, we see these commercials that are on right now, the fixillinois.com. Are those campaign commercials? What is it? I get a little head scratcher when I'm like, what is this? Are you running for something?
Yeah.
Or are you just direct addressing the voters? That's very strange to me.
I mean, the problem that a guy like Bruce Rauner has is that he doesn't have somebody to run against for some time. And so, but in the meantime, all the Democratic candidates are going to be beating up on him for a number of months. And they're all going to be talking about how bad Bruce Rauner is. And everything in the news is going to be from all these Democrats talking about how bad Bruce Rauner is. So I think that what he's attempting to do with these ads that he's running is to inoculate himself to some extent, to demonstrate himself as, well, I'm a smart guy. I know what I'm doing.
And he's got the money to direct or dress. And we saw that a little bit earlier on in the budget mess fiasco where he was doing commercials on issues as opposed to commercials on running against anything. It's like a new day in Illinois politics.
Hey, why not, right? Why not? You got the cash.
Mike Fouché in studio with me from the Daily Line. He joins me every Wednesday night. We'll take a quick break. We come back. We got to talk about the consent decree, the interesting stuff coming out of the Justice Department.
Yeah.
And then maybe we could talk about CPS and CTU. No
why
strike.
Not, right?
Why not?
Why not?
Do you have your acceptance letter to college?
Otherwise,
you can't graduate.
I got in. Yeah.
Mike Fouché, stay with us.
That's it.
There you go.
That's the stuff. Oh, my gosh.
It's
yes.
Uplifting.
It's kind of swinging. I'm ready to jam. Yeah, that's good.
That's what it's saying.
You know, I jam all the time.
It's saying, Mike Fouché here. Let's jam.
That's right.
Mike Fouché from the Daily Line in studio with us every Wednesday. We're talking Chicago, Cook County, Illinois politics, a little national sometimes. But let's talk. This one is a combination of both. The consent decree that really was about reforms for the Chicago Police Department was rushed by the Obama administration. We saw there were a lot of questions at the press conference about whether or not
the investigation.
Well, it turns out there might have been something to that because Attorney General Jeff Sessions puts a halt, a review. On all consent decrees that are in process or that have been sort of put out, including
that
the one
have already
in Baltimore,
been signed, yes.
The one in Baltimore, and of course the one here in Chicago. What does it mean? You think that this is doom and gloom? It's over.
Well, I think it's over for Chicago.
I think
all of the consent decrees that have already been signed.
It's hard to get out of, right?
In Albuquerque and New Orleans, not quite sure in Baltimore, but in those places that. The people, the monitors in those cities have come out and said, nope, no doing. This is signed. It's contract. You're done. Baltimore, it's not signed yet. The judge has it and has been reviewing it. And Sessions just sent a notice saying, could you wait another 90 days before you approve it?
And Chicago's even further behind that. We haven't got to a point of
we haven't even gotten to a negotiation. Right, There's nothing even discussed. There was a agreement that we will sign one. And, nothing's really moving.
What's the thought? I mean, because the takeaway I got from the conversations about the consent decree, this was essentially reforms that were put in place or will be negotiated to put in place with the Justice Department, the Chicago Police Department, to change the way we police here in Chicago.
Well, the deal, I mean, you can say we're going to have reforms, but actually, as Zach Farden, the Northern Illinois District U.S. Attorney, who was just fired by Trump, as he wrote in his exit letter out the door, you can't trust the political system in order to actually complete a police reform. You need to have a consent
decree. Whichever way the wind blows.
Because when you have a consent decree, you basically make an agreement between the police department and the federal government, and a judge oversees it, and then a judge appoints a special monitor who oversees it and has sometimes the power to reprimand the local police department.
Let me ask you this, you know, because the one thing I learned from the conversations about the consent decree is that officers, there were some on record at the Justice Department talking about, yeah, they're at a point where they don't feel like they've got enough adequate training. That when they go into the south side of Chicago and Inglewood, they don't, they're not equipped for the way that the nature of the way that the world has changed. This, so it's, so to the naked eye, you may say, oh, this is good for police officers, but there are a lot of police officers who say this is not necessarily the direction we want to go in.
It's confusing to me. I've had conversations with lots of beat cops and folks that are in the leadership right now at FOP, and we've reached out to people that are at Daily Line that are running for the leadership of FOP. And when you mention to them, look, you know, one of the things that is mentioned is lack of training, and also that there's currently a lot of problems with the disciplinary system with the police department. It's not even, it's not evenly applied. Police officers have a lot of problems with the promotion system that's being done. Those were all part of what would have become part of the consent decree. And, you know, they just don't like the whole thing overall.
Really?
The police officers generally. So there's something I want to bring up here, which is that just because there won't be a consent decree that's pursued by the Justice Department doesn't mean that there won't be a consent decree. Now, an interesting case is that in 2015, in the city of Oakland, a civilian group actually pursued a consent decree and got a consent decree signed with the police department.
So it doesn't have to be the federal government?
It doesn't have to be.
Interesting.
And what you basically have to do is that you have to be able to sue in court and say that there is a pattern and practice of various problems with how policing is conducted.
Doesn't a Justice Department investigation that's already on the books prove that?
You could say that. And I think that there would be an argument in court one way or the other. But one of the things that you have to be able to do is bring in a whole bunch of people that would be willing to testify. As it's almost like a class action suit. You have to have a large group of people that are going to be able, that have been prosecuted unfairly or have been treated unfairly. And when I say large, I mean hundreds of people. And they have to be deposed, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that has to happen with these people.
And there's still a chance, I mean, I guess there's still a chance that the Justice Department would move forward with negotiations over consent decree because they're reviewing it. You say the tea, reading the leaves, it's not going to happen.
I think reading the tea leaves, it doesn't look likely. But I've spoken to a number of police reform advocates who seem to think that it is possible to actually pursue a civilian-led consent decree. Now, I don't know that they're necessarily going to do it. I mean, like I said, the bar is very high. You have to get a lot of people that would be willing to testify. It would be a very expensive trial. It would be very expensive if it went to trial, which I don't know if the city of Chicago would fight or not. I don't know if Mayor Emanuel would fight that.
All right, so let's do a quick pivot here and talk about the Chicago Public Schools. They made it into the news, Trump using his generic speak. Say it's rough there.
Right.
And it just confused everybody. Rough. Then, of course, the CTU says they're not going to strike on May 1st. That officially came out tonight. But the other one, which is very strange, was Mayor Emanuel talking about a sort of mandatory need to show an acceptance letter to graduate. This would be an acceptance letter to university, community college, apprenticeship, trade school, internship, or the armed services. But you have to provide, in his new plan, an acceptance letter if you want to graduate high school. Has this even been done before?
I don't know. I mean, this really seemed kind of out of left field, and a lot of people are kind of wondering what that's all about. It seems like kind of a strange idea, particularly in a time when maybe necessarily going to college isn't really the right thing. Do you get an acceptance letter when you go to trade school?
Or community college,
college? I don't know, but
I'm not sure.
You know, it doesn't necessarily make sense to me, because college... I think the presupposition is that college is the path that you're supposed to be taking, you know, when you come out of high school, which, you know, do you really want to fork over tens of thousands of dollars, or, you know, maybe there's another way to do it. I have a great friend who, he never went to college. He went right to work at the Board of Trade. You know, he's 19 years old working aboard a train. Well,
he does say that, you know, the workplace today has that requirement, the requirement of paperwork or to show things. So why not get kids ready in that form? I mean, maybe there is something to the idea that, you know, to at least show that you need to do something past high school, you can choose what you're going to do. But, I mean, is there pushback on a plan like that? I'm sure we'll hear much more about it.
I mean, I think it just sort of came out, and I think it's still pretty early about that. It seems like a funny kind of thing, particularly when we're really not even sure if we're going to have a full school year this year. It seems like a funny thing to talk about. You know, at the same time, city council, when they got together last week, there was a lot of talk about, are we going to be able to find funding in order to do this if Rauner and the state legislature continue to stop having state funding for CPS? CPS still needs another, you know, 200 some odd million dollars in order to complete the school year, or else we're talking about three weeks less of school for CPS.
Right. It's the same problem we talk about all the time. How can you move forward on some things when the bread and butter is
just not being taken
care
of?
When the bread is not being buttered. How about that?
Yeah, man, I'm going to remember that. That's a good one.
Mike Fouché from The Daily Line. You can check it out at dailyline.net. Also, The Alder Track, the podcast that's released every Friday.
The Aldercast every
Aldercast,
Friday.
Aldercast, sorry.
Yeah. It's going to be a good one this week. You better get it.
All right.
You better get it.
Mike Fouché, good to see you, buddy.
Good to be here.